Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. You know, advertisements were invented by the devil to make Ayn Rand happy, and no one wants to make Ayn Rand happy. But audio production is expensive, so to keep commercials off this podcast, I've got all three ebooks in the Happy Bureaucracy series rolled into one for the price of a single book, which honestly is the best way to support this podcast. Just check the description for a link and tell your friends about the crazy shit you have been listening to have less friends. Thanks. And now, for something completely different.
A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note: strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 15. Up a goddamn mountain, that's where they had to be. It was a tall order, and not just because of the 6,000 feet in elevation they had to climb. First, they had to survive long enough to get to the base of it. The shark jettisoned them forward with erratic force. It had taken them all morning to walk to the base of the mountain to Slaver City the day before, but at the breakneck, gonzo, crazy speed that Rabia was driving, they would likely get there before the hour was done. An hour is an eternity when you are being chased by testosterone-fueled maniacs, especially when the words consent and empathy are as foreign to them as the Kuiper Belt. No matter how much distance they made from Slaver City, they couldn't widen the gap between them and the psychopaths behind them. Truly, things that were far worse than death were only an error away from descending on them with a rabid fury that would make the berserkers of old blush. Arthur was filling out paperwork. It was probably not the best thing that he could be doing with his time, seeing as there were a dozen men behind them that wanted to turn his skull into a sex toy. But what else was he supposed to do? He could barely fire a gun at a stationary person only a few yards away. There was no way he could get a shot off on a moving vehicle going at a rate with no regard to safety. He had a 22B violent incident in the workplace form to fill out, and he had time to do it. Rabia was inventing new ways to curse at their sociopathic pursuers. "You festering shitbuckets!" she yelled behind her. Name of employee or victim of the violent incident: Jack DeWitt. The cars behind them had closed some distance. The old shark's muscle engine, built in the 1970s, was just not able to outperform the newer models. "You black-hearted used car salesman Nazi fucktards! I hope you choke on your red pills!" Rabia spat. Position or grade of employee or victim: commissioner of operations. The labor of a high-speed chase made the cars behind them whine. "Puss cunt! Puss cunt!" Rabia screamed. Events leading up to the violent incident as seen by the filler of this form: "Did you hear me, you bastards?" Arthur looked up at Rabia, the woman that had stolen his heart, with a look of terror. "That one was horrible," he said. She smiled mischievously, smoke pouring out of her nostrils like a dragon. "You killed a man today and witnessed terrible, reprehensible violence. Yet that word is where you draw the line?" she nipped, gripping the steering wheel as if it were a neck she was trying to strangle. "You killed that man. I could barely hit him in the shoulder," Arthur retorted. Silence rolled out to a length that was uncomfortable. "Thank you, by the way. That's the second time you saved me," Arthur said, breaking it. The screams of raw vocal cords could be heard over the agonizing purr of the engines. The slavers were closing the distance. "I'm still saving you," Rabia said, glancing at him and clocking his clipboard. Her eyes widened. "Is this really the best time for that?" Arthur considered her question. He looked in the rearview mirror and saw a gang of slavers. They were still too far away to shoot. But even in the short time he looked at them, they had got bigger. Arthur's finite life, in just a moment, could be measured rather than guessed. Yes, he replied, after considering that Form 22B was 40 lines long. The mountain ahead of them looked no bigger. It was no guarantee of safety, and that was an ample reminder of how long they had been chased. What was the plan once they were climbing it? What would happen if they were never able to gain any distance, or their pursuers followed them all the way back to the IRS bunker? The IRS snipers surrounding their borders could stop a few if they were on foot. But the rest? They had transferred their supplies from the van to the Shark, most tightly packed away in the back, and some in the steel cage behind them. Seeing that they were in a convertible, it was conceivable that Arthur could climb over and grab whatever they needed, allowing Rabia to continue driving like a drowning bitch. But were they mentally prepared for the long haul? Having dogs biting at your heels for that long was mentally and emotionally exhausting. Maybe I should wait to finish this form, Arthur thought. It might give me something to do when the adrenaline is permanently spent, and we still have days to go. Days to go might be a little too optimistic. The slavers started firing. Son of two whores! Robbie spat as more shots fired. Unholster my hand cannon and take a crack at them. And for God's sakes, man, try and hit something. As Arthur unclipped the top of her holster, he noticed the tendons in her legs were tense like taut ropes as she kept the pedal to the floor. He unbuckled his seatbelt and turned round. Pick the bastard you want dead. Look down the scope of that monster and unleash hell, Rabia demanded. No longer did Arthur want to be the burden to protect. Too many enforcers had lost their lives, and Rabia's was one that he wanted to preserve. He pointed the gun at an old Volkswagen with oversized tires that were twice the size than what was reasonable, and a collection of buzz saws for a fender. He looked down the scope and sighted a slaver. Unleash hell. He pulled the trigger. The recoil startled him so completely that he dropped the gun outside of the car, and to add insult to injury, he missed his target. Why are you so fucking useless with phallic symbols? Rabia yelled, her voice slightly fried from the punishment of anger she had flooded into it. Do I have to do everything? She snapped her fingers. All right, I've got a plan. Glove compartment, hand me one of my treats. Embarrassed and ashamed, Arthur opened the glove box, expecting to find drugs or alcohol. But instead, he found four metal pipes capped off on each side. He took one out and found that the end facing away carried a fuse. Pipe bombs. The blunted sound of a bullet rang off the backside of the Shark. Arthur's nerves had cracked. The sound of the bullet connecting had sent him down and behind his seat like a turtle receding into their shell. He handed the pipe bomb to Rabia. Is this another distraction? Rabia looked at him wickedly. She held the steering wheel in place with her knees, lit the fuse with her cigarette, and chucked the pipe bomb out the window hatefully. Explosions are distracting, she said sweetly. It bounced twice on the ancient and beaten pavement before exploding, concussive force and shrapnel tearing and mangling everything near it. All that was left of the Volkswagen and its occupants? Modern art. Rabia cackled. Take that, you goddamn swine, she yelled. Clearly concerned they might meet the same fate, the cars behind them slammed on their brakes. I built these the last time I was paid by the IRS, Rabia said casually. So, technically, this is our taxpaying dollars hard at work. She motioned for another one. Keep an eye on them. If they get close again, we can toss another. Arthur handed her another pipe, then turned around. They had given them distance, but much of the slaver fleet had caught up with the others. Four Harley-Davidson motorcycles, chained together like sled dogs, made their way to the front. From what Arthur understood of the beasts, they might have been the only vehicles in the mutant fleet that were heavily modified before the war. These bikes and their riders were the apocalyptic equivalent of Huns on horseback. Arthur did a double-take, taking a moment to register the madness he was witnessing. If the Harley-Davidsons were sled dogs, the sled was a familiar grim throne made of teeth and bullets, fashioned into a chariot. The colonel. His hideous waddle blew in the wind. One of the riders pulled a sawed-off shotgun from his back, holding the pistol grip tightly, and fired at them. Arthur ducked as hot buckshot licked his earlobe. Now! He yelled, cowering behind his seat. The pipe bomb flew directly into the path of the colonel's chariot, but one of the riders was quick off the mark, disconnected from the others, pulled ahead and intercepted it. The bomb ripped him and his metal stead to shreds, painting the pavement with blood. Unaffected by the carnage, the colonel raged forward. Arthur desperately wanted to return to his paperwork. He was clicking his pen in a rapid-fire succession. Arthur met Robbie's eyes in the rearview mirror as she gave the colonel the bird. The mountain looked to be only slightly closer. "Will a bomb be enough to stop that thing?" Arthur asked, unable to hide his fear. "Don't know," Robbie said, then held out her hand. A smile crept onto her face. Arthur handed her the third bomb, leaving one left. Another knee on the wheel, another puff of smoke, and the pipe was on its maiden voyage. Another rider detached and drove towards it, a guttural yell erupting from him. The pipe bounced off of the motorcycle and then splattered it on the road as it exploded. The colonel had to swerve only slightly. He was not going to let up, and the loss of two of his sled dogs did nothing to deter him.
"God damn it!" Robbie screamed. "I wanted to set these off to celebrate once we got home. This is a waste of my talent!"
Arthur removed the final pipe from the glove compartment with unease. He thought about praying, but was certain that whatever God was left to hear him needed none of this, and that praying for a bomb to hit its mark was a decidedly terrible thing to petition a higher power for. Instead, he clicked his pen twice. "You know," he said, "this is technically work supplies for you. I can help you get this deducted from this year's taxes."
"Stop flirting," Robbie replied to a man who was completely serious, "and put that away for now. They have no idea how many of these things we have. Let them think we ran out. Take some shots at them instead, but don't drop my goddamn gun, J-Man."
The colonel had backed off a bit, probably anticipating another of Robbie's arts and crafts to come tumbling towards him. Still, he was close enough that Arthur could see his ranted chin flap. Arthur pulled out his pistol Robbie gave him earlier. Arthur knew he couldn't shoot a gun to literally save himself. He knew that he would likely miss and just end up making a lot of noise. He knew it would probably be another exercise in failing to do something that was considered masculine and hoping that his companion would not give him too much shit for it. But that waddle, it would be worth it if he could just shoot that ugly thing. Arthur laid his gun over the top of his seat, using it to steady his hand. He lined up his sight, took a deep breath, exhaled, and pulled the trigger. In a universe of chaos and indifference, where the absolute worst that can happen does, and without fail, in a world of devastation and atomic annihilation, good things occasionally peek their heads above the parapet. It is these small, often deserved moments that make life worth living. Despite the colossal amount of shit that the universe can fling at you, random chance is sometimes on your side. Sometimes the meek get what is owed to them. This was decidedly not one of those moments. Arthur not only missed, but the shark hit a rough patch of road, projecting the pistol from Arthur's hand out of the window and into oblivion. And Rabia had seen everything. "Sorry," Arthur said, embarrassed. He sunk into his seat and fastened his seatbelt into its locked position. Arthur looked directly ahead, doing his best not to meet Robbie's eyes. "I'm really sorry," Arthur tried, easing the situation. "Not at all." Robbie drew a knife and, with a quick jerking motion, cut through Arthur's seatbelt.
"Under no circumstances do you get another gun," Robbie spat. "How in God's name are you the only man in the entire godforsaken United Wastes who can't fire a gun? How have you survived this long?"
Not knowing which to answer first, and suspecting he was on a two-word basis with her, he said, "Don't know," then continued to look forward, clicking his pen again. The mountain had finally graced most of the horizon, and the dead skeleton-like trees that lined it and its base were near. Soon they would be back in a forest of hard, dry wood.
"Hand over your shoe," Robbie said, puffing on a cigarette and no longer looking angry.
"What? No. Why?" Like a rock hitting still water, Robbie's face turned from serene to uncorked anger. You lost your goddamn shoe privilege when you lost two of my favorite guns. Did you see how goddamn shiny they were? It was obscene how much time I spent polishing them, Arthur. Fucking obscene. Now you hand over your shoe so that I can throw it at these goddamn animals.
The shoe was off his foot and in her hands in a moment. He had no want for Rabia's rage, and besides not having a proper toolkit for conflict resolution, save for passively aggressively filing papers to HR, the shoe allowed for equilibrium. If all that those two guns would cost him was a shoe, well, that was a trade he would make.
"Now hand me the pipe," she said.
They had passed the first few trees and were soon surrounded by them. Each desolate spire made way for a thicker piece of forest, and the deeper they drove, the closer to the road the trees became. Rabia threw the shoe overboard. The colonel gave it a wide berth as if it were another pipe bomb. Not willing to sacrifice themselves, the remaining motorcyclists came to a halt. It took the colonel a few seconds to realize what had happened. He fired a shot in the air, then commanded his riders to move on forward again. The chariot was slow to accelerate and was becoming a point on the horizon. Rabia cackled with delight. They pushed on and made good distance. Arthur let out a relieved laugh.
"We are going to make it," Arthur thought to himself. "That witty, sexy maniac bought us some space, and we are going to make it."
Rabia threw the last pipe bomb lit and with a panicked fuse at the foot of a tree. The base exploded in a cloud of splinters, and the ancient dead thing fell over into the road. It was magnificent. It then promptly lit the surrounding dead forest on fire.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice, available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.